Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass?
So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Action Park Media.
Hi, I'm Ethan Suplee. Welcome to American Glutton. Outside of acting, my two favorite things to do are diet and eat. I have a very complicated relationship with food, and on this podcast, we're going to talk about all of it. Food as entertainment. Food as sport. Food as fuel. I'll talk to experts and the average person, just like you and me.
I hate to ask you to do anything, but if you're enjoying the show, please take a moment to like, subscribe, rate, review, all of the above on whatever app you're getting it from. Today on American Glutton, I have the one and only Josh Barnett. He is an American mixed martial artist legend. He has been fighting in the sport for as long as the sport has been around in the mainstream. I have loved watching him, and one of my favorite things about him was that he was a catch wrestler when people were utterly geeking out about jiu-jitsu. Josh Barnett is an incredibly intelligent guy, and I hope you enjoy our conversation. Josh Barnett, welcome to the American Glutton Podcast.
I can get behind that. I had a meal so big, so fantastically massive in Glendale yesterday from my buddy, George, the promoter for LXF MMA fights here locally, that I didn't even eat for the rest of the day.
Was it one an Armenian meal?
It was Armenian. Well, he said it was more of a Persian, Armenian derived, and there's a few variants of Armenian food, and this being one of them, and it was just unreal.
Kofta and tadik and all the
whole deal, all the, you know, the spices to put on top, the different rices.
That is my favorite food.
That is so good. Yeah. I mean, it's good everywhere. And whether you have that specific variant or you have a Lebanese variant or a Greek variant or any of the other variants that are similar, but maybe not exactly the same. Don't kill me, guys. Right. It's all
the
good.
The Turks and the Greeks
it's
are exactly
good.
The same.
Yeah. It's all amazing.
I am so excited to talk to you. You really do embody like a warrior monk, like a philosopher. Like I could picture you a couple hundred years ago wearing a robe, walking around with a staff, just fucking, you're going to battle people with your mind or with your body. Either way.
Well, it's a matter of a choice in terms of how you can grow. Now, we don't know exactly how strong physically we can become. We don't know how strong mentally and spiritually we can become. But you will never know if you don't strive.
Right.
And it's just like what I'll tell people that want to get into fighting. I'll say the likelihood that you'll be a world champion is probably not at all. The likelihood that you're really going to make any money out of this for the expenditure you're going to put into time and effort and all that, also not likely. So throw all those ideas aside and then do everything to be the absolute baddest, best person you can be. And even if you turn out mediocre, the only way you could have got there is by giving it your all.
Right. And you can apply that to anything.
Well, it's true, right? And it's also a matter of being comfortable and wanting to go forward knowing that failure is what you're going to see most of.
Yeah.
And people are so failure averse, they're so safety conscious, right? I mean, it really is, you know, people want more for safety than for anything else.
Yeah.
And that is anathematic to any human flourishing whatsoever.
This is what we got to talk about. And I've been thinking a lot about safety. And a lot of it for me will always go back to, because it's been like the tenet of my life, weight and obesity and the struggles I've had with that. But I even look at like the way we eat in America and go like, well, at some point people starved a lot and they wanted some kind of buttress against that.
Mm-hmm.
And so we got a lot of really cheap food.
Mm-hmm.
And now people generally are not starving in America. But now we have this unintended consequence of obesity.
Yes.
And so these are the factors that are not always being considered when we give up our freedom for safety. And you and I talk a lot about structures and stuff like that, and the way structure should be. And I personally want structure, but I want structure that I've laid out for myself.
Yeah, I mean, structure is a necessity. You cannot get around it. I am not an anarcho-type thinker. I mean, I love the idea of people and their personal freedoms and the ability to make their choices. But at the end of the day, you need structure to navigate within these things. You also, you need proper hierarchies. You need, people don't mill around just everybody being just an atomized individual and create anything. Like, somebody has to take charge. Somebody has to be the one to either be the leader or will be elevated into that position, whether they wanted it or not. An MMA team does not create championship fighters without a coach.
Right.
And, you know, there's arguments when you can get into about scale and about, you know, other subjective factors coming into things. And that's a different discussion. But the concept of having proper structures that are accountable and knowable and somewhat predictable is all throughout human history. Like, it's never been any different. Religions are structures. All societal governing bodies have been structures. Kingdoms, right? You know, whether it be you want to create a liberal republic or you want a monarchy or whatever, there's structure. There's always structure. Structure because it's needed, because people need to know how to operate, because you cannot treat the world in a post-structuralist, postmodernist way, because as much as it can be an interesting thought experiment, it leads you nowhere. You just spin in circles and you do nothing. You know, the world is made of action, not of sitting around theorizing things. And people need what I like to call operational objectivity. And so you can maybe get so deep in the weeds and come up with something about, well, how it's not, you know, here's the subjectivity, and then you're operating as if it's actually objectively so, but it's like, great. Could that actually allow me to take a step forward and not fall on my face? No, it doesn't help me.
Right.
Does this put food in my mouth and give me nourishment and give protein to my, yes, no? Either it does or it doesn't. Like, there's only so many things that we can operate in any kind of subjective sense. And then the rest of it has to be seen from some sort of operational objective stance, so that you know that how to move forward, have somewhere to go, so that as you invariably make mistakes, you have somewhere to either go back to or somewhere to move forward from.
Yeah. Yeah, when I think about law, and I'm not a fan of law necessarily because it gets into this external thing making choices for
me.
It's always tricky. But when I go like, okay, what would the most rational law be? It would have to be purely objective.
Mm-hmm.
And there are ways of looking at something and seeing what is there that everybody will agree is there, unless you have just a total lunatic. And so in these schemes, we have like ways to communicate to people or to show objectively what will lead you towards the most likelihood of like health as an outcome.
Yes.
Right.
Yeah. That health is a fairly objective thing that I think that we can deal with. You know, outside of any structured law per se, but yeah, health is, you know, things are in regards to biology are fairly you can look and see the patterns throughout time and history, plus, you know, using the scientific method over time, we have
we've figured out some stuff.
Yeah, exactly. And so, because, you know, one thing, you know, as soon as the first thing that popped into mind when you're talking about, you know, keeping things as astutely objective as possible, it just makes me think of Jeremy Bentham. And I'm like, oh, utilitarianism, it just creates bug men and ruins the world.
but I'm not even saying that because I think if we go like we know what the structures are, right? If you're gonna use intravenous drugs through a dirty needle,
mm-hmm.
that has a high likelihood
yes.
of causing you
Correct.
Adverse health problems.
Yeah, and having structures, whether you want to argue that they are the best way of doing it or just a way of doing it, people can operate with that. And one of the, I think maybe the best thing that comes to mind for me anyways, is thinking about the insanity of the Holocaust,
sure.
right? What, you know, that entailed in terms of putting people in camps and the graduation to it and all that insanity. And yet you get Abraham Maslow and you get Viktor Frankl, two of the 20th century's most important philosophers. People of insane importance and ingenuity and will and thought were forged in the worst of scenarios.
Yeah.
And that their research and a lot of where they've created these concepts come from being in something that no human being should ever have to be put through. And yet, to me, it shows that human beings are truly incredible. Like the things that we can endure, and no one should have to endure something like that, is astounding to me. And yet the way modernity has turned us into such soft, pliable, Play-Doh weak people that we can't even deal with the least of difficulties these days. And in fact, the ability to have food so readily available has actually started more so poisoning us than actually keeping us from detriment.
And right. And so this need for safety and this and so you want safety so much that you create the space for, like, at least for calorically, we're safe.
Yeah.
You will not starve today.
Correct.
I will not starve today.
We could literally,
by the way,
live,
you and I could not eat all week and we're not going to starve.
I mean, you could literally live on fast food manageably. It's not a healthy way of doing anything.
Of course.
But you could calorically figure it out, your macros and all, and you could do that and do
very
so cheaply.
Yeah.
I'm not saying that's anything anyone should do or that that's necessarily a good thing.
No.
You know, I think we should, you know, it'd be better to spend a bit more and have healthier food, period.
Sure. I agree with you, but in that same universe, and it's all of this where it's like, we need safety as it seemingly like the group seems to make that their number one thing, safety. And you look at, like, and not to diss on college kids, I have a couple college kids who are doing great.
You have
I have a bunch of kids. But the ones in college, you talk about safe spaces and I just go like, well, what happens in the real world if somebody like tells you to go fuck yourself?
It's also
like
a complete inversion of what, or I should say a complete perversion of what is a safe, quote unquote, space. You know what a safe space is? My gym. California Mixed Martial Arts with Chad George and my foot. That's a safe space.
And you guys are getting hurt all day long.
And you know what's safe about it? It's not even about, oh, you know, it's a bunch of men and women that can fight and physical. No. It's safe because people have given and earned the trust of each other through such an intense personal interaction that they can have communication on a deeper level, that they know that they have trust within those that are around them, that this place is vetted to them. And you know, it's funny because I remember going on a walk out in Joshua Tree and just wandering around. And the idea of borders and fences and concept of safe spaces was just swirling around in my mind. And basically what it came down to is that, you know, all a safe space is really not the wokest definition of these things, but really what the actual content of that is a place that you've vetted, that you know is safe or understood enough that you can mitigate or inform anybody else and yourself of what's there. And so if I put that fence around my property, I'm saying that within this, I take accountability for this. This is my place. I know what's here. I will look after it. I will tend to it. What I allow in and what I allow out is by my metrics. And so therefore, I'm being the person that accounts for whether how safe it is or isn't. And I can tell you how safe it is. I can tell you what flora and fauna will be there. I can, if I invite you onto my home, I can say, hey, don't go to that northeast corner because that's where rattlesnakes are.
Right.
You know, but that.
And we want them there.
Yeah. Well, yeah, they have to be there. You know, it's their place too. And if you know, God forbid it's a problem, you know, hopefully we can relocate them, not eliminate them.
Yeah.
But
I think about that in terms of everything, because the more that we give the safety over to the group, mm-hmm. and say, everybody has to assume my safety,
mm-hmm.
The less personal responsibility we have and the more weak and susceptible to unsafe things we become.
Exactly. You know, human existence, outside of these last 300 years, have not 200 years, maybe even 100 years, hasn't really been all that safe, and not even necessarily for the sake of wars and human interaction on that level, but just the fact of the matter is, nature will murder you. Nature has made more things extinct than mankind ever has.
Yeah,
and it is only the fact of our own concept of ethics and hopefully what I would like to think is responsibility given to us for our having will and intelligence that we actually try to protect that which at times also we try to destroy.
Yeah.
But, you know, nature has never tried to preserve anything. It just lets it work itself out.
Yeah.
You know, the concept of will to power from the Nietzschean perspective, it's like, well, that grass stops growing, not because it decided I have enough space, but because something else took its resources.
Right.
Something else took its sunlight. Something else took whatever, because, you know, given certain environments like black bamboo, if you plant that in Washington and you don't put it in concrete or what have you, it will overrun everything. European blackberries will overrun and do overrun everything. Why? Because they can, and nothing stops it,
right,
unless mankind goes in there and removes it. Which it was probably mankind that brought it there in the first place, right. but just like the kudzu. But the reality is that's what nature is. I'm not here to say that nature is evil or bad or whatever, but nature does what nature does, and its processes do not alter themselves on behalf of us.
Yeah,
you know. And you know, speaking of safety, what is it? Well, you know, the other thing is, you know, to the great H.L. Mencken, the urge to save humanity is almost always a false face of the urge to rule it. And that once you've established that kind of safety, the next thing is who gets to decide on that group safety? Who, and of course, a hierarchy will create itself.
Yeah.
You know, what is safety? Safety to you or safety to me? Well, the general human compunction is going to be safety to me first,
yeah,
safety to me second, safety to me third, and safety to you fourth, maybe, or safety to fuck you,
right,
you know?
Yeah. I had COVID last year. It kicked my ass. I had 102 fever for 2 weeks, 16 days, something mm-hmm. like that. I never had to go to the hospital, but I had protocols from a doctor, like if you go to this, you have to go to the hospital.
Which is great. And by the way, it's a massive travesty that it is so difficult for your average citizen to be able to have that informed kind of information.
Sure.
Like I just found out a week ago that monoclonal antibodies are available to people that are not over 60, 65 plus.
Right.
Where is that information out there? Where is that?
No idea. But so I had that, kicked my ass. Then I recovered. I didn't have long COVID and I was fine. And I was going to do this movie and they said, have you been vaccinated? And I said, no, but I had COVID a
right.
couple of months ago. I've looked at my mm-hmm. blood. I have antibodies, all of this. And they said, no, you have to be vaccinated. And so I'm not like I've had other vaccinations, so I was like, okay, I don't really think it's necessary now, but I'll get the vaccination. So I got the vaccination. But the more evidence that I'm seeing, it's like the vaccination is no better at creating immunization than
it
just
doesn't seem to be.
Disease.
No, it doesn't. And even calling it a vaccination is disingenuous. And there's a lot of media propaganda to push it in such a way. Personally, my thoughts were, well, we're dealing with things that we don't understand. I do believe it was a man-made gain-of-function virus.
In the labs.
I believe that we screwed
that
around with it.
That seems to be what everybody says.
And
now.
Just from a logical, rational perspective, it seems absolutely most likely. But regardless of how it got here, the thing is, it's new. It operates in ways that we weren't prepared. Coming up with the mRNA concept to find solutions. These make sense to me, you know?
Sure.
And you know, it was disappointing early on where they were like, this is the Trump vaccine and F that and F that. I'm like, we don't really have time to play politics about this kind of stuff. We need to be on a united front to find our best solutions. I don't give a damn who comes up with it. If the ghost of that freaking dysgenic mutant Goebbels shows up and all of a sudden he has the answer, like, I'll freaking take it, you absolute piece of shit.
Right.
But the fact is, viruses and things of that nature, again, this is nature. This is the universe. It does not care about who you voted for. It doesn't care about what you think about post-structuralism or neo-Marxism or I don't know, whatever sort of ideological bent. It doesn't care about any of that.
Yeah.
It's just going to do its thing. And I thought, well, you know, maybe this thing will help out. Maybe, you know, we got multiple companies working on it. Maybe mRNA will eventually become the way to create vaccinations for things that we couldn't vaccinate
before. And isn't there some idea of treating cancer with the mRNA stuff?
I'm not familiar with that. But, I mean, if that's the case, awesome. You know, if we can make strides, if we can become better, let's become better. But politicizing and creating these ideological weapons out of stuff is, in my opinion, 100% unacceptable. Like, this is literally criminal to do that, because it really is, as they love to say, people's livelihoods on the line.
Yeah.
But they don't treat it as if our livelihoods are actually important. Yeah. Only the livelihoods that they think are beneficial to them, which is disgusting. And that's not how you run a country. And that's not how you help a people to flourish.
It also is very bizarre to live in LA, because I do know some anti-vax people. They're all super left hippies.
And I could see that. Yeah, sure.
And so then when I turn on CNN, and then I know some just straight up Democrats who think that they're now secretly, these liberal hippies are Trump people. I'm like, I don't think that it really has anything to do with politics at this point.
Not exactly. And of course, this is... all the things that we see, and even the elements of the way we deal with food and obesity and what, I mean, these things are all really, these are onions, man. These are multi-layered, and these have been happening, things that have built up over a lot of things over decades and decades and decades, which, that's, things just don't happen. They don't just show up tomorrow. It doesn't work that way, especially in terms of the way governments work, especially in the way that all societies move. They just don't turn a corner like that. I understand why people can be anti-vax, like the actual, and not the stupid bullshit media garbage term that they throw around in the cathedral. I mean, legitimately, people are like, I'm anti-vaccination. Okay, yeah, well, you know, skepticism, and you can look at like the Tuskegee experiments, and there's plenty of stuff that could make someone.
Or what about if you're Amish or whatever?
Yeah,
Christian,
that's true.
Religion,
yeah, it could be that.
They're just like, we don't want the deal with
true
modern
enough,
medicine.
True enough.
I'm
I
don't care if
there,
you
there's
do
that
or not.
Too. Yeah, that's another vector that exists. Me personally, so I can put it out there, I'm not anti-vax. I had my vaccinations when I was a kid. I had a tetanus shot not that long ago. I'm totally for using science God, there's so many qualifications. Not the science, which is bullshit in the media, but I mean the actual concept of the scientific method and advancing our material knowledge in the world on how it works to make us better, to help us out. You know, I love the fact that that I'm a huge classic car guy. But, you know, when I sit back and I go, I'm not going to put 1968, Pontiac heads on this car when I can put 2021 aluminum heads on this thing and get way more compression, get better heat exchange, get more velocity and airflow. And why would I do that? I have this now. I'm not going to go back to that. That's not that these things were bad or they're terrible or that I think they suck. It's just that, no, we've improved. So as we can improve, let's improve.
Don't go anywhere. We'll be right back.
For one, I would love to see a sterilizing vaccine created out of this that is more in line with our traditional vaccines.
Right. And by the way, when you say sterilizing, you don't mean in order to, like, let's be sure.
Oh, no, I don't mean fourth industrial revolution crazy. Right. No, I don't mean that. Yeah. I mean, like, your standard, like your polio vaccine, your smallpox vaccines, things like
the
that.
The vaccine is clean.
Yes. But
by the way,
is there incentive for that now?
I don't know.
Is there incentive for that? Because and as Thomas Sowell will go on about humans and incentives, and the Austrians will too. If the government and corporations and and insurance companies are all working together to keep one pathway the only pathway because it is keeping them in business, keeping them making money, keeping them in seats of power, allowing them to shift their little rent seeker managerial elites across their different platforms, you know, like the Pfizer guy going from government to Pfizer and Pfizer to government, you know, all that stuff that's been happening forever. Why would any of these, you know, groups, and I don't think it's always emergent, unlike Yarvin, I don't think everything is completely emergent. I think that, you know, emergent things happen, but eventually we all communicate. We're communicating. We are group oriented individuals. We don't do everything alone, and we don't do everything separate.
Right.
You know, it doesn't take.
No, I think if the hospitals were full, like in LA, for instance, the first when in March of 2020, my wife works with doctors, mm-hmm. and a doctor would come into her office every Monday morning and go, next week there will be triage in the parks. Mm. It's going to be chaos.
Could be, yeah.
And then the next week he said it again and again and again, and we never got there. We never had.
And you know, that's okay to be incorrect.
I agree.
There's nothing wrong with that. Totally. And having those kind of concerns, especially around respiratory type illnesses, which I think one thing that's also not talked about is respiratory illnesses are kind of a specific issue in that they make you have to isolate, which means you have less available space to do things, and it's harder to create logistics. That's a fact. That should be normal. Nobody should balk at that, nor should that be considered crazy at all. You know, this is just, again, this is the reality of the type of situation we're dealing with. You know, you might want it to be some other way. Oh, why can't it just be like, I don't know, some other virus where we can... No, I'm sorry. It doesn't work that way.
Yeah.
This is what we have.
I want the better virus.
Yeah, I want the virus that makes it easier for me to get sick. And well, you know, you can... That would also trail into the concept of safety and the atomization of people to such a degree where everything, including their doctors, are just service things. If people could just app their way into health, they would.
Yeah.
And completely... you know, never have to actually deal with a real person, acknowledge that they're a real person with feelings and emotions, and that no, they just want automatons to give them what they need to serve them now.
How do we though then, taking a few steps forward and looking at the overall health of America, how do we not, if we're all demanding such safety, not then take another crack at what people eat and put in their bodies.
I know.
It doesn't seem like an illogical leap to me.
It doesn't. And it comes down to the thing that it always has to come down to. You're responsible for it. And your responsibility even extends to what I would call your tribe. You know, if you've got friends and family and whatever, you need to be there for them. You need to help them in small and great ways. You can't make everybody eat the way that they want to. I couldn't get my dad to get it to turn his health around. He just refused. But you got to try. And even if I fail or if I was incapable of making the adjustments for him or helping him to make those adjustments, I'm not going to – that doesn't mean I'm not going to help you if you have a question. That doesn't mean I'm not going to help my fighter. That doesn't mean I'm not going to reach out to my friends and other people in my life and check in on them on the simple aspect of trying to see how they're feeling emotionally, spiritually, whatever. Also, help them with their health. You know, I've had friends hit me up and go, could you help me with a little program or what's, you know, the Jesse, the lead singer of Killswitch Engage, is like, could you help me navigate supplements as a vegan? And I go, yeah, I'll give you some advice here. Or like, I remember I was talking, another one, a friend of mine, George from Death Heaven. He said, could you get me on a workout program? I said, yeah, 100%. And it's not just about like, oh, you know, you're helping, you're making people lift weight. No. This is deeper than that. This is human interaction. I mean, I know that modernity is a really unnatural aspect on humanity and the world at large, but it does come with benefits. And while this stupid little black box is poison in a lot of ways, it's also a massive tool that unlocks a lot of things that were never available to humanity before. And through this, I can even at the smallest level have a conversation with my friend George and send him information so that he can then use for himself to better his own life. But also we can converse, yeah. We can talk, we can have a conversation. I can make a phone call. I can send him a link. I could do whatever. And the difference is I don't approach it as this thing and it as this tool is somehow has any more importance than the actual action and motivation and authenticity between me and what I do with it. Yeah. And that has to be number one.
But you're talking about it too in super specific terms that allow for nuance. I think that there is a lot of utilization of this tool in very general ways.
Well, that's how people normally work. Like people are not capable in general of dissecting the minutia. It's like, that's why, you know, the postmodern post-structuralist stuff will mess people up so bad, because it goes down such a basically like almost drug-induced sounding spiral of insanity and subjectivity that it just is like, oh my God, what is, you know, what am I even doing anymore, right? It's just completely destabilizing to most people, because you can't, not everybody is capable of wrapping their head around such crazy, like not everyone can read Being in Time by Heidegger,
right.
But yet there are things within there that if someone can extrapolate it for the person in a way that they can understand it, it will help their life. But some of us can read Being in Time and it's freaking hard as shit. And it half the time doesn't make much sense. Hegel doesn't make sense because he's an idiot and he doesn't make sense, but that's a different story. It's a lot to ask for people with everything going on in the world and all the things that they're even trying to sort out within their own struggles and battles, whatever those may be, small or great, to then try to make them understand. They don't have the bandwidth for it. And people want sense making to be simple. That's part of the reason why religion has been so successful across the ages.
Answers.
You know, it lays it out for you. It works upon things that are incredibly universal. I don't care what religion you follow. I mean, Campbell, Jung, people have done the work on it to show that religions are more alike than they're different.
Yeah.
And there's a reason for it, because there is more alike to us than we're different.
I see a religiosity, if that's the right word, in a lot of aspects of life today, where somebody's just gone like, I'm just going to accept this is truth,
mm-hmm.
and follow these principles.
100%.
Politically, even in diet, you can have people who are just like, this is the way you
absolutism eat. On all these different things. And it is a religious bent. And the crazy thing is, the scary thing to me is having a whole bunch of irreligious people unaware that they're actually religious.
Yeah.
You know, I'm
you can have a ton of people, atheists,
yes.
who behave in more religious ways than some of the Christians.
All that atheist plus humanist stuff, like they're all religious. They're in utter denial, but they are 100% religious. And I'm an atheist.
Science,
I'm an atheist myself. But
trust science people are religious.
Yeah. Well, the trust science people don't actually do science.
You got to assume if you're doing trust science, you got to assume that science has a moral position, which it cannot have.
No, science is utterly, you know, it's also when I'll get into conversation with people about capitalism, is they'll assign all these things. So when I go, capitalism is a neutral structure. We make of it what we want to make of it. Now, sure. You can have arguments whether capitalism should be laissez-faire, should be this, should be that. Okay, fine. That's, you know, creating structures or removing structures within using the concept of markets and, you know, the ability to sell your labor and goods and what have you and create businesses or, you know, groups, co-ops, anything, however you want to structure that. But capitalism is, it is ethics free. We provide the ethics.
Yeah.
And guess what? We're pretty fucked. So the fact that we can take something when the things with the most freedoms are the things that we will pervert and fuck up the most. Because I was on Lex's podcast and I said, I don't have an exact answer, but it seems as though for every unit of like freedom and responsibility, you need like 2 to 3 units of accountability. So, you know, that takes precedent over your ability to do whatever the hell you want has to be bolstered more by being accountable to it.
Yeah.
And, you know, we don't have any honor culture anymore, which is a problem. You know, we outsource all violence and all responsibility for our own safety and even just our own spiritual dignity, let's say. Like, you know, I had to learn a long time ago that while the concept of, you know, sticks and stones will break your words will never hurt you, if you allow people to disrespect and demean you and tear you down in public in a certain way, everybody else will say, well, then that's the way that you should be treated because you think you should be treated that way.
Yeah.
Or even just that, you know, it's funny because I'll talk to some gal pals of mine, gal pals, and I'll say, you know, it was interesting that it used to be decades ago that if you made an aggressive move on a woman, she might just full on slap you and people would take it. They would just be like, oh yeah. And get laughed at even like men getting whacked by women or a drink thrown in their face. If they were being obnoxious, there was a price to pay and they accepted like, yeah, I shot my shot, which was a bad shot and I paid for it and it's on me.
Yeah.
Not on her.
Right.
And, you know, not to say that I want women running around punching people in the face, although I don't know. People need more punching in the face.
I don't. You know, the idea of punching people in the face, I think if you've never been punched in the face, it can either be really horrible or not as bad as you probably think it's going
to
be.
I agree. And I try to.
I don't want to be punched in the face by you.
Well, I mean, it's highly, highly unlikely to ever happen.
Right.
Unless it was like on purpose with gloves on. Sure. And yeah, but I always try to remind people that I go, you know, human beings are pretty phenomenal.
Yeah.
You know, as much as I'm dogging on humanity here, you know, much of it comes from the fact of what I see us as being capable of and what we can do and then what we choose to do instead. And, you know, we're constantly at war with the weakness within ourselves, and choosing strength is always a choice. It is always a choice to choose strength, to be stronger in what ways that you can be strong, because not everybody's strong in the same ways. But strength is a universal, in my opinion. Everybody possesses it in some manner or another.
And it's also a really, really easy thing to increase.
Mm-hmm. It like, is. It, small things it, make big differences.
Yeah.
And but people...
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. Start getting your best night's sleep in these sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. Try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee. Plus, get 15% off your first order at bollandbranch.com. Code BUTTERY. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
Mom deserves better than a drugstore card. This Mother's Day, surprise her with a truly special personalized card from Moonpig. Add your favorite photos, a heartfelt message, and we'll even mail it for you the same day, all for just $5. From mom to grandma, we have something to celebrate every mom in your life. Every mom deserves a Moonpig card. Get 50% off your first card at Moonpig.com.
Moonpig.com.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
You can get punched in the face, you'll be fine.
Yeah.
For the most part. Like, you guys, it's not as bad as you think. I think the emotional concept around it is what really scares people the most. And
that it's violent.
Yeah, right. But, I mean, we are never away from violence. Courtesy, everything that has ever been created within social norms is about reducing violence and reducing the need to go to violence, because violence is at the bottom of every human interaction of all time. And it is even now, because at the end of the day, you can sit back and go, well, you know, that's illegal. But, you know, when someone's putting a knife in your guts, they don't care. And no one's going to save you. No one's going to stop them. It won't matter that they're going to go to jail or whatever. Like, those are actually abstract concepts to actual human existence, yeah, and nature itself.
I read a very, like, we're talking about outsourcing violence and stuff. I read a very funny meme. And some of these, I just, you know, I think memes can be really, really insightful. And
well, they are supposed to be, they're supposed to be viruses. They are supposed to infect.
Right.
Let's get that straight. Memes are supposed to work that way.
Yeah, this one said, the cops are here to protect people from the criminals. And then the other guy said, no, the cops are here to protect the criminals from us. And I think there's some truth to that. Though we outsource a lot of the violence, I don't want to have to defend myself, so I want this police force. A little bit like if there was no police source and a guy came in here right now to raise hell, you and I would have to deal with that.
Yes.
And in today's day and age, we might actually get in trouble for that.
That to me is the trouble with it. You know, I mean, at the very least, I think, like, there's a law in the books in Washington that, you know, it's called the law of mutual unarmed combat. You know, if there's a cop right there, you can go, hey, you know, me and this guy,
we're
whatever,
gonna have a fight.
And they go, okay. And there's some basic rules around it. But yeah, I think that if people are allowed to just fight, and guess what? If you get hurt from it, that was your choice. Right. You know, you're like, oh, well, but that's too big of a price to pay. Well, then don't get into a fight. Don't create things to such a level that fighting is what is left.
Yeah.
Don't be such an asshole. Don't be so antagonistic. Don't, you know, and if you really feel like this is something that you have to dig your heels on into the point of clenching your fists and letting go, then accept that.
Yeah.
Accept that. Be okay with that and know that if you really feel like you did something for the right reason, then whatever you price you pay for it, that is just the way it goes. And that is what comes with the responsibility of being a active human being in the universe comes with.
Yeah.
And you cannot avoid that. And having somebody else to take the responsibility and to bear the brunt of all that and to be the arbiter of the whole thing is just an abdication of your own being in the world.
Yeah.
You are not Dasein. You are Das Mann. You are the last man. You have no interest in actually trying to have any sovereignty or agency in the world.
As a kid, I had a little bit of a romanticism about fights. I got into some fights. I was in the hospital once with a fractured skull. Like, I liked mosh pits. I didn't mind, like, slamming my body into stuff and having stuff slammed.
Been in a few pits myself.
Yeah, there's an exhilaration to it. And getting punched in the face, if it's not too hard, can really wake you up and, like, bring you into the moment a little bit. And then I started having kids. I started, and the requirement today for me to get into a physical altercation is an order of magnitude higher than it was when I was a kid. Like, say whatever you want to me. Mm-hmm. You could even say whatever you want to my wife, And I might probably just tell you to go fuck yourself and move us along. You know right. what I mean? The actual need for violence.
You're describing, one, a healthy relationship with violence. Two, security.
Yeah.
Security in yourself and knowing what is important. And look, I can flat out say that I am born for violence. I love violence. When I'm in the ring fighting for my life, it feels like I am the freest. I am at my highest state of being. Than I can be in.
Yeah.
It is the moments in battle, whether I'm winning or losing, are the greatest, most enlightening, highest ways of existing that I have ever had. But that being said, you will not see me get engaged in low-level, stupid, idiot stuff ever. You know, I've had people try, you know, I had a guy losing his shit in a car because of I was in a rental and I think I might have accidentally like swerved at him something, right? Like I got screwed up on some little on-ramp or whatever, and he was losing his mind, like act like he's gonna hit me, and he's driving he was driving the Subaru STI, and I'm just thinking, your vehicle's really nice, why would you fuck that up? And he's losing his shit, and I just started laughing at him. Like, you know, at the end of the day, you didn't really think this through. So if I take this rental Jeep and just plow into you, I'll destroy you. Not to mention, you have no idea what sort of skills do I have, not just as a fighter, but even behind the wheel. You know, I've qualified for SCCA road racing license and then road racing competitions and different, you know, stunt drive drifting stuff from training. And it's like, oh, I know exactly how to get into your bumper,
you're
spin
a car
you off.
Guy also,
I can screw you up and you will lose. And you'll have a great car that shouldn't be ruined. You'll have maybe what injuries you in, and all this is a waste of time because you couldn't control yourself. You couldn't control yourself and you're so insecure that you have to explode about the world. Now, people might, well, you don't know what his day was like, what led to this. And I go, I understand that too. But at the end of the day, we are the only people that determine how we act in the world. I'm not saying that anybody can do anything to you and you should just be like, oh, well, I just will choose not to be disrespected by it. It's not that. But there is a very wide gulf between acting like a complete asswipe and spinning yourself up into some completely negative response and standing your ground and holding your own honor. There's a wide gulf between that. It's always worthwhile for someone to keep their honor. It is not worthwhile to go out and allow yourself to spin emotionally and spiritually out of control to the point that you're creating suffering and adversity where none needs to be.
Yeah.
You know, and that could be even just as simple as don't be a shitty to your weight people.
Right.
Don't be shitty to service people. You know, even when if they're doing a bad job, okay, you know, that's one thing. But like I had a conversation on the phone with some outsourced call center, and of course it wasn't much help. And I was getting pissed, but I said, you know, I know that you're not the one who actually makes the calls on this kind of stuff. And you're just here doing your thing. And so, you know, my being upset is really, it's with the company, not with you. You're just a guy. And, you know, please don't think that I think you're a bad person or that you're responsible for this. And that's a small thing, but to me,
but it changes that guy's day if he's just getting yelled at.
Yeah. Well, we all have what we have to do to get around in life. And you know, this person finds himself working in a call center doing what have you, right? Okay.
Don't go anywhere. We'll be right back.
That doesn't make them a bad person.
Sure.
If the company they work for sucks, they don't get to choose how that is employed. They don't necessarily get to choose how these things are going to be structured. And it's taking it out on them is not okay. You know, if I remember being at a restaurant and it was, you know, they kept coming back and be like, nope, that's not there. I go, you have a full menu here with all these items on here. And you're going to tell me that these things aren't available. And I go, well, okay, this really sucks, but you're not at fault and I am mad at you. But you should tell your manager or whoever is in charge of this, the logistics of putting this all this stuff together, that they are fucking up and they're making it hard on you because you have to be the one to interact with these patrons. And let's be honest, a lot of people are likely to not be as rational with you, and they're probably going to take all their bullshit out on you,
yeah,
because they're emotional and they're upset, and that's not okay. And you know, you, as an employee, you shouldn't be, when these things can be avoided, they should be, and you shouldn't have to pay a price for that, because at the end of the day, all that does is deteriorate the restaurant itself and make it worse for everybody.
It's the whole ecosystem becomes trickier and trickier. You like Nassim Taleb?
I do like Nassim Taleb. And even when I don't agree with him.
Sure.
And which is totally fine, because, and that guy, he loves getting aggressive as shit. But I dig him. And I like, you know, sometimes it does take that kind of aggression. You know what? If he's wrong, fuck it. Who cares? But when he's right, he's
passionate,
he's right.
About
I love it.
Yeah. When he, I like I
all
like,
about that squid ink and deadlifts, isn't he?
Yeah, I'm really into the idea of anti-fragile and how people.
Yes, me
I really
too.
Like that for me resonates deeply, and I also like how he talks about efficiency creates fragility.
Yes, true. Yeah, yeah. Efficiency is not the only reason to do anything.
No, but we seem to move so steadily towards efficiency.
Yes.
I even find myself doing it in the gym. Like, I'm going to do this first because then I can get to that and this. And I'm like, wait, I'm just now making the biggest struggle of my day I'm trying to put efficiency into.
Well, I mean, and why are we creating efficiency? If there's, if we have a deadline to get something done, or we're organizing certain tasks, okay. Right. If you only have 30 minutes to get into the gym, what is the most efficient workout I could do? But simply striving to do everything based on efficiency, like I'm not, and this is not going to be a dig at Ferris, but like the 4-hour this and the 4-hour that, you can't, it did not work for me. You cannot structure your life that way. I get the underlying concept of it. And I also understand that it is designed within this paradigm of modernity and the insane amount of hours now that people have to put into things, the way costs are created for certain, you know, between living and goods and services. And you know, I understand that this is also a thing born of this very age, like literally that, all that 4-hour biohack. This is stuff 100% created by modernity.
Yeah.
Which in and of itself is, you know, my grand overall answer is all that shit is wrong. The reason it exists is wrong. It is all from the wrong path. But the idea of being more efficient with things for the sake of, you know, being better or getting more things done. I mean, it's, look at it this way. The first time you build an engine, you're probably not that efficient with your time. But the second, the third, the fourth, the fifth, you start learning how to, you know, little shortcuts and tricks and whatever, and you become more efficient. But you become efficient through mastery. You don't become efficient to just be efficient.
Yeah.
And efficiency in and of itself has no spiritual component. You know, and again, yeah, the atheist constantly going on about the spiritual, but I don't have a better term to use, but it seems to be this thing across all people, times, cultures, whatever, that there is this thing in us that is a more of a driving force than anything else.
Right.
And, you know, when you put your efforts into something, it's not just the material output. It is the time, the feeling, the spirit of the whole endeavor itself. And the way you approach it makes a massive difference in what you create at the end of the day, but also how what you did affects the way you are.
Yeah.
You know, the way going into the gym to try and just, I'm going to be a world champion so I can be famous and rich. You will be a broken human being. Going into the gym, be like, I'm going to be the strongest, greatest thing that I can create out of myself. I'm going to tackle these challenges head on. I'm going to see where I stack up in the world. I'm going to see if I can overcome my weaknesses and my fears. I can see, you know, Ensign Inoue talking about the thing that got him into fighting being that he was so afraid.
Yeah.
That he just had to do it. The fact that that fear existed at that level meant that it was something he had to tackle.
Yeah. That's such a badass.
He is such a badass. Shout out to you, Ensign. You are the man. Which is also the first time I met you.
Yeah,
was at that seminar at Ensign put on at Raw Gym. Yeah,
15 plus years ago,
something like that. Yeah. Yeah,
that was awesome.
It was awesome. It was
by the
cool
way,
time.
That was so awesome. We had gone to a fight the night before at the Coliseum,
mm-hmm.
and I remember a dude came to the seminar. Who had been shocked in the parking lot of the Coliseum the night before and still was like, I wasn't going to miss this seminar. He didn't roll, but he had been shot like three times.
Well, it is the Coliseum.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So he's
I was
clearly
just like,
anti-fragile.
Oh my God, I'm in the right place. People are coming who got shot last night. They're not going to miss Ensign and Josh. I'm so happy to be here.
Those are the kind of things that you'll see that make up like the deep bedrock of human flourishing. That where
and that guy wasn't there because he thought he was going to be the number one fighter or anything. He was there just because he wanted to improve himself.
Think about all the stuff that exists in the world that you could experience if only you prioritized it. And again, I don't mean in this concept of all material efficiency and all. No, I mean you don't know who you could meet. You don't know who you could learn from. You don't know what conversation you might have. You don't know what place you might end up in on a hike,
yeah.
Right? I mean, the world is full of some of the most beautiful and incredible things out there if you allow yourself to be open to having them affect you and be in your life. It's one thing to sit there and go like, oh, I'm going to go to a club and I'm going to do this and I'm going to do all this work. I'm going to make this money and blah, 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 blah. But like, to do what?
Yeah.
Right? You know, and like, oh, I'm going to go to Thailand and do this whole thing. Oh, you mean you're going to basically buy yourself into this whole tourist experience and think that you're getting something authentic when you're getting nothing authentic? It's just you are being drawn into the same experience that everybody else is set up to do for the Farangs to go down there and do it.
Right.
Versus I was open to knowing a guy, Ensign, who connected me with San Tian Noi, one of the greatest Thai boxers of all time, who then opened his gym to me so that I would then, on my days off shooting Never Back Down 3, would hire a cab, take me out to San Tian Noi's, train, get to know him, get to meet him and his fighters and get to be there. And then I would eventually send my fighters out there. And where are we? 45 minutes outside of Bangkok and Pathum Thani in nowhere with like two little shacks that are stores and like one restaurant or whatever. But the reality was there was something there to see these people, the way they did their life, their training, the knowledge. And to think that I'm not just being given a technique from a guy, but instead I am being put into the chain of being from him and everyone behind him, and he's giving me fire to add to my own. Every time I teach and I work with people, Eric Paulson, Matt Hume, Billy Robinson, Carl Gotch, like these people all gave me their
you
fire.
You have the entire, all 10,000 hands, all of them, yeah. They all come into that one.
They were not a zero-sum start point. They are built up of everything that came from that. And what's built into them? The adversities they went through in every aspect of life, everything that has forged and formed them has now had some imprint given down to me. And everything that I take with that, I give to the world as well. And through that, they never die.
Yeah.
These people and their things are passed on to the rest of the world in one way or the other. And to me, that is the kind of responsibility that I want to holster in this world, that I willingly and wantingly and strive to carry and to build upon,
yeah.
And to give more to the world than the world has ever given to me, if I can ever balance that ledger out.
The more efficient thing to have done is to go to the kickboxing academy on the Koh Sam Road with, you know, next door to the strip bar. And the computer cafe,
yeah.
Because that's easier and it's right there next to your hotel.
Right. Or to just like, oh, what's the best gym? What's just like, oh, what gym has the most champions? I'll just go to there.
Yeah.
Like, well, the the gym that maybe produces the most champions might not even be the gym that can produce the champion out of you.
Right.
And you, sorry, it's just, there's no guarantee.
That story's beautiful because you had to become uncomfortable to some degree, whatever it is, if it's just going a little bit out of your way to achieve this.
Well, isn't there always something in the way? Something in the way? I had to figure out how do I get out there?
Yeah.
Well, you know what? My fighter, Victor Henry, he's got this fight coming up October 30th, LXF in Burbank. He is the number one guy unsigned in the world right now at his weight class, 135. He's the deep bantamweight champion. He's undefeated in Japan in this company called Ryzen. He's 20-5. This kid is an absolute badass. And the thing is, he is his stepdad immigrated from Mexico, got his citizenship, did his whole thing. And this dude is a guy who works construction, he's just like that salt of the earth, man's man, like go out there and get it done. This guy doesn't speak a lick of Japanese. He speaks English and he speaks Spanish. Victor had a fight in Japan and on his own secretly bought a plane ticket, flew himself out to Tokyo on just basically like a one-day turnaround trip, made his ass all the way from Narita Airport to the Ariake Coliseum or the Differ Ariake, which is like a little weird section of Tokyo that would be really difficult to get. He navigated his whole way to get there and made it. And then we're in the back after the fight, Victor wins, and Vic's like, God, what are you doing here? He's like, I came to watch you fight.
That's
and he
amazing.
Just goes, well, how the hell did you get around, man? You've never been here. You know, he goes, look, man, if I can get over a border, well, I can get in here.
By the way, I really want to paint the picture of what it's like to get around in Japan, because I've traveled the entire world and do believe that Japan is the hardest place to get around unless you have an interpreter and a driver.
It can be.
You cannot get into a cab and expect to say words to them understand you.
I'll be honest. The first time I was ever aware that I wasn't in Kansas anymore was when I got off a plane in Japan. I'm like, oh,
there's nothing phonetic to sound out. You can't read anything.
I was trying to get to the Hilton the first time I was there because that's where we were staying. And I'm like, Hilton Hotel. Eventually I was like, Hiroton? Oh, Hiroton. So I'm like, oh,
it's a tough place to get around. And I've been there.
I imagine China is probably even harder. I've been to Shanghai once and that was.
No, I think China, there are requirements. Like when you show up, you can't just like wander around China.
Well, I could see that too. Yeah. Where China's like,
you gotta like have stuff set up a little bit more from my experience going to China.
Mm-hmm.
I had a person driving me around both times, but I did in Japan try to go out on my own and wander around, and it was a disaster.
Oh, well, I lived there for 2 years, and I've been working there for, and I speak Japanese okay. And,
yeah,
it takes me a little while to get it back, but.
Uncomfortable.
Well, I had to get uncomfortable. I had to just throw myself into it. And by the way, why was I going to just sit in a hotel room? What days I'm there. No, there's a whole world out there of people and food, especially food, and experiences to have and beauty in the world. I'm going to experience it.
Yeah.
I want that because at the end of the day, my life is made up of the days that came before it and those experiences and nothing more. And I'm going to fill those full as much as I can to grow who I am, to learn more about the world, to learn more about people, and to then be able to use that to give to others and to have the coolest stories at the fire, you know,
right.
When I'm an old man, I'm already old man, a grandpa, maybe, let's say.
Right. I feel like I can be a grandpa any day. It's coming.
Don't go anywhere. We'll be right back.
You know, one thing that I just have to say on your behalf, I guess, is that, it makes me happy to see the podcast and it's doing well, and to see your journey in fitness and everything that you're going about. But I think and this comes from a personal perspective of knowing you and talking with you, and that is, I like the fact that this is authentic and real, and it isn't about the way that most people approach any endeavor these days in that it's a zero-sum game. It is, even when it comes to LARPing into something, it's LARPing to get other people to buy it, not LARPing to turn yourself into it,
right,
which is a completely different story. And not to say that you're LARPing at all, but that people go into this that like, oh, well, what market can I take advantage of and do this? And I'll do this health and weight loss thing and blah, 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 blah. And I can, you know, I can, there's all this that I can tie into maybe a supplement company. And they think about it all in this efficiency and material point of view, but that's, you're not actually really helping the world with that, in my opinion. And the fact is, you are utterly authentic about doing what it is that you do, talking to people, and your own life journey as to where you end up here. And this podcast is a reflection of this. This is not a, you know, I've had so many people try to get me to do a podcast, but I'm always like, this just sounds like a money grab. I'm not interested. Those are things, you want me to talk about those things because you see them as more profitable. I don't want to do it. And then it's, you know, we want to like have you work on this platform. And I go, no, I don't want to, if I have something important to create or say, it's going to take real effort.
Yeah.
And it needs to be done right. Otherwise, all I'm doing is putting more stupid, pointless bullshit noise in the air and making people, you know, giving them the dopamine hit as if they're doing something when they're, and at the end of the day, they're probably not doing anything at all.
Yeah.
You know, they just, the idea like, oh, well, I listened to that podcast, so therefore my, no, you didn't, no, it, I like that we can entertain, and I want to inspire people where I can, but ultimately you are the impetus for your own success.
I believe that too. And I think that any structure, like I'm happy to talk to somebody who says it's all gotta be vegan and it's gotta be this. And I go like, that's not useful for me, but maybe it's useful for somebody.
There could be some grain of knowledge in there that could be helpful, right?
Yeah.
And whether they knew it or they didn't.
Right.
And, you know, my thought on veganism is that's an absolute modern derived luxury diet.
I'm not into it either.
Humanity has never been vegan.
Yeah.
Veganism is not a thing that has ever been about human existence and growth ever. Now, if you want to be vegan,
even if you go into like the Hindus, and
they're not vegans, they're vegetarians.
Yeah,
they're vegetarians.
They eat some stuff.
There's a difference between the amino acid profiles that you get from things made from milks, like butter and ghee and what have you, and you know, broths. Well, they don't necessarily have broths so much because that would, but you know, if you feel that you couldn't eat an animal because it had to die, okay, I get it.
Yeah.
Most of the time, veganism is just, it is just another ideological aspect attached to other things. It's not really all that much about health for the most part. And maybe there's a small subsect of people out there that veganism is truly the healthiest way for them because either A, there's something medical about them, or B, they are incapable of eating any way other than, unless they create such a super strict parameter for themselves, they can't be healthy.
You think about veganism, you think about the everybody must be vaxxed thing, and you go like, it's maybe realistic for Los Angeles.
Hmm.
It's not possible for the world.
Well, yeah, veganism would starve most of the world.
Yeah.
It would not, not sufficient.
Even if everybody in America got vaccinated tomorrow,
it wouldn't
still
stop
have
it.
The majority of the world.
No, we have all kinds of breakout cases of double vax people, especially in Israel and other spots. You know, if you look at the amount of single to double vaccinated, quote unquote vaccinated people in the United States, we still have cases. It is not.
You'd have to get all the people and the animals, because the animals do present a reservoir for COVID.
Yeah, I imagine so. At the very least, if someone sneezed on your cat and you touch, I mean, look. There is no absolute safety in this, and no, this is not a pandemic of the unvaccinated. This is a pandemic of how pandemics are. You just can't get through it just because you want it to be differently.
Yeah.
You can't get through it just because, well, we created magic serum A on something you've never known about. It's brand new. You've never dealt with during a system that you've never tried, and you're going to say it's 100%. Absolutely, guaranteed.
Nothing's 100%.
No, and you know, we got to work hard to get through this. We got to be as healthy as we can be. You know, what little stupid thing is, people clean your phones. every day.
Right.
Clean your phones. You know, disinfect them.
Alcohol.
Do saline solution. Nasal flushes. Keep your vitamins up.
And if you're really worried, there's a ton of stuff you can do for your body to make it healthier.
True enough. And if you're really concerned about getting sick and you feel like you need to be more isolated, okay. But when you do that, but also tell your friends, tell your family, let them know where you're feeling and communicate with each other and help each other up. You know, if that's how you have to get through this, okay. You know what? I'm not here to tell you that you're a bad person or that you're stupid or whatever.
No.
You know, find those mechanisms that are going to keep you healthy and sane because it's one thing to work on your own physical health, but the way that things move and the constant assault of information and the level of, like when I say level, I mean like the density of information that is being shot into your brain every day is at unprecedented levels. And, you know, it is of no surprise that, different personality disorders and neurological and anxiety derived stuff has been massively on the rise because we're not meant to operate this way. And technology always outpaces our ability to adapt to it.
Yeah.
So, I mean, it is what it is, but, we have to be more unified in helping each other to get past this kind of stuff, less ideologically and politically minded in regards to something that has zero interest in those things, like a virus.
Yeah.
And, it's real. Also, some people say that it's like fake, and I'm like, you got to be fucking kidding me. COVID is fake.
I had it. It's definitely not fake.
It is not fake. It is people. It's a real freaking thing out there.
And it'll fuck you up. It fucked me up.
I know a bunch of people that got it that didn't hardly do shit to them. And apparently it's easier on women than it is on men, but there is no promise. There's no promise, right. You know? I know some people that have been vaccinated that got, I know people that have been double vaccinated, they got COVID. I know some people that got the shots and it kind of made them feel like shit, but they got over it. I know some people that got the shots and it didn't do anything to them.
Yeah.
And you know,
I will say this on the movie that I did, there was eventually a COVID outbreak. And we were in another country and most of the crew was not vaccinated.
Mm-hmm.
The COVID outbreak was not amongst the unvaccinated crew. It was all vaccinated Americans got, not all of them 100%, because I didn't get it.
Right, but most of them. And see, that's the thing. We don't even know entirely what these vaccine protocols we've come up with are going to do towards viral mutation, long-term effects on the people that it's on or the virus itself. I mean, we just to sit back and say you don't know seems to be like maybe that is the most hated position that you could take. Maybe that is the thing that people will accept the least. And I can understand the fear of the unknown. The unknown is something that is that's an even deeper discussion, but it weighs a lot on the...
That's why it's so easy to enter into these religions, because you just go, well, nothing's unknown now because I just am ascribing to this.
It's all been laid out to me. Yeah. And so I have a lot of sympathy for the concept of the unknown really preying upon the psyche of the populace at large.
Yeah.
And
by the way, when I say religions, I'm not knocking religions. I think Q is a religion. And
Q is a religion.
And if you're just plugged into CNN, that's a religion.
That's also a religion.
And
these
the
are all religions.
Who say trust science.
That's a religion.
That's a fucking religion, because religion. Science doesn't have a moral compass.
The problem with these modern religions, though, is they don't have thousands of years of human interaction and even compromise and conversation.
Yeah, and anybody that says that the religions killed the most, okay, take a look at Hitler, Mao, and Stalin. All three were atheists. They killed a shitload of people.
All operated in a religious sense.
Yeah. So I'm not, I don't put one thing over the other. I just think a lot of people who are anti-religion in the classical sense are behaving in very religious ways.
Of course. Surprisingly, I think it was Harris that was the one that said that there seems to be a neural pathway in all people already pre-wired for religion.
He's a religious dude too.
Well, he is, although he denies it. It's so funny that he's so materialist. That's like my gripe with Harris is I'm like, how can you fight against the concept of myth being more of a driving force in rationality? And you know, you just like, he gets on this perpetual, like, skipping record about religion. And I'm like, I understand your logical perspective on it, but for a guy who's done all these different psychotropic drugs, meditation, all this kind of stuff, and is as bright as he is, I don't know why you can't seem to get past that.
Yeah.
And then, you know, he seemed to get a bit religious when it came to politics as well. But he did make some mea culpas recently, and it's just like, well, none of us are perfect.
Yeah.
We're bound to get things wrong. Having such an absolutist mindset is part of what really gets us into real big problems in the first place.
I like the guys who try to be as rational as possible, because then I can look at that and go, how is that useful for me? Because it's very rationally put. It's not emotional.
Rationality is easy to pick up to. It is much easier to disseminate rationality than it is, well, maybe that's not the case. But
I don't know. Q seems to be doing really well, or was.
Was,
I saw
documentary.
He caught fire for a
minute. Well, think about this also. I mean, as much as the press would love to tell you how dangerous Q is, right? It benefits them. So why would they, do they really want it not to exist?
Right.
They don't really see it as they don't actually see Q and all that crap as a real threat. What they see it as a threat that they can put out there that makes them money.
Right.
And, you know, is it a threat? I don't know. I tend to believe that stuff like that is not.
I think it's a threat if they advertise it as much as they do.
Maybe.
And
I mean,
you get people really, really dug in and you create these cults. I think it can be a threat.
It could be. Yeah. I mean, it doesn't seem healthy.
I mean, listen, I don't know anybody into Q. I'm not scared of it. I think it's pretty silly. It's like Flat Earth.
Oh, boy.
You know? Like, is that a threat? Is somebody believing, and I love Eddie Bravo, and we've had some arguments about this. I just go, like, there's nothing threatening about it.
No. I mean, if you assign flat earthers to the head of NASA.
That's a problem.
But otherwise, no, it's not. You know, I mean, it just, at the end of the day, you just got to be the kind of person that goes, well, that's nonsense. But
yeah.
It really, if it doesn't affect me, it's not even an aggravation.
Yeah, if somebody's saying the only way to lose weight is eating steaks, I don't agree with that. But like, if they're having success, that's fine.
Yeah.
I don't begrudge them their success.
By the way, if nobody tries it, how do you know it? I'm not saying you need to try Flat Earth.
Sure.
But I'm saying, you know, not to think that every diet is the same for every person. Always, that everyone's biological and genetic makeup is always going to, like, I can eat keto and carnivore and have great results.
I think
it just gets old for me after a while.
I'm totally with you. And I personally feel better when I have some carbs. When I have too many carbs, I don't feel good. But Flat Earth is like, I don't see how anybody benefits by lying about the world being round.
I don't either.
Right there, yeah. I'm done.
There's a lot of things. If you really sit back and someone throws this crazy conspiracy theory at you, you go, well, how does somebody benefit from it?
Yeah.
Like, how do they profit, so to speak, from this?
Unless it's just a big troll and you got somebody who started it all, who's sitting back and laughing at the chaos they've created. Outside of that, and that's the same thing with Q, like whoever, if it's just a big troll and there's somebody just laughing at all the people who have really invested in it, then maybe that's the benefit.
You know, and as much as it's pretty crazy stuff, at the very least, it is correct in that we do have to look after our kids.
Yeah.
You know, I'm not saying you should have anything to consider about
a flat earth.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. But, you know, but that's, you don't need Q to fucking say something so utterly obvious.
Right.
Look after your kids.
Yeah.
Look after all kids. You know, help people to be able to develop in a healthy way as much as possible, and allow them to experience the severity of life and, you know, when you can mitigate it in a way that makes sense, do so. But otherwise, let them break their arms, fall out of a tree, but keep people from, but definitely keep bad actors and evil people from messing with them. Yeah. We should not allow anybody to mess with our children. It is absolutely unacceptable. And I don't care what movement you want to take on to say, don't fuck with kids. Straight up, don't fuck with kids. Don't ever fuck with kids. It's not, it destroys societies, it destroys children, and it is unacceptable in all ways. There is no excuse for it. Dead stop. There's no arguments for that. You can't make any argument here. That's it.
Yeah.
Don't fuck with kids. Ever.
And if all of the comfort of fast food and eating big meals at night in front of your TV has led to discomfort in yourself, it's okay to be uncomfortable on your way out.
Yes.
It's okay to prepare to have to work hard and be uncomfortable.
It's okay to have to admit to ourselves when we fucked up.
Right.
And we fucked ourselves up.
Sure.
You know, it's okay to say, you know what, I wasn't as strong as I needed to be today. And that's on me.
Yeah.
But that's today, and there's tomorrow, and there's next week and next month and next year. And strength is a choice. It's always a choice. You can either choose to be weak or you can choose to be strong. Choose to be strong, even if it's only 1.1% stronger.
Sure.
Choose to be strong. Yeah. Always choose to be strong. Don't be afraid of the fact that you're not perfect.
By the way, I like to talk about killing your clone, and that means that every day you do something to improve yourself, mm-hmm. as though you're going to meet yourself from 24 hours ago, and you have to be just a little bit better. And I think about you a lot with this because I think you do it so perfectly in both ways, intellectually and mentally, and also physically. It could be reading a book.
Yeah, it could be. I mean, I spent time reading some, even when I was, laid up a little bit recently. And it's just like, you really have to make an effort. And maybe it shouldn't seem that. Why should it be that hard to sit down and read this book right now? And sometimes some of these books truly are challenging, and yeah. It's not an easy slog to get through it. But just one of the ways I've just been wired to be is that someone will make a claim. Someone will say something, or they'll either make a claim or they'll say, like, I don't understand this. My initial thought is, okay, what is it? Why? How? Let me investigate the claim. I want to know. What you say this, I'm going to look into it. You don't know what this is, I'm going to look into it. I want to know. The ability for me to know more, to be stronger, it's, again, a choice. So I'm going to figure it out. I'm going to go, and regardless of whether it solves my question or bolsters their statement or not, I'm going to go. And whatever I got to read and look into to do that, I'll do it.
Yeah.
You know, I'm not afraid of what I might have to investigate. But I'm also trying to not just make myself feel correct.
Right.
Because that's, you don't actually move anywhere in that position. You just stay in the same circular logic, and then
there's no growth.
You know, well, you just create your own paradigm.
Right.
And what's the point of that?
Yeah,
you know, it's okay to know where you're at and know that that is not encompassing of all that could be.
Right.
It's fine. And, you know, study what you want to study. It doesn't have to be politics and philosophy and history, and it could be anything. It could really be anything. And although, you know, I remember there was this huge push for everyone to read all these books on particle physics and quantum physics and all this kind of stuff, and I'm like, oh, so everybody wants to feel like they're actually smart now or something, you know? Like, at the end of the day, I sit back and I go, what the fuck are you gonna do with that? None of this is useful to you in any way, shape, or form. None of you work in physics, none of you work in particle physics, none of you work in astro. You can't use any of this. But
I read a book on chaos theory, and
well, that's a little different.
But there was a lot of math in it.
Oh, was there? Peter J. Carroll's?
Yeah.
Okay, yeah.
And I just at the end was like, I'm glad I read it. I don't know what it did for me.
Yeah. That happens, right? And being exposed to something isn't a bad idea. You know, I mean, it's like, okay. I don't know when talking about Nassim Taleb, he'll go on about all kinds of stuff about stats and what I'm like, bro, this is way the fuck over my
head. No, yeah. And I heard somebody say this recently, and I thought it was so elegant. Nassim Taleb puts forth a great idea and then just repeats it.
Yes.
And rationalizes it. The idea is fantastic. Mm-hmm. The black swan is fantastic. Mm-hmm. Anti-fragility is fantastic. That's all you need.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, and, you know, watching him lay in on people sometimes is pretty funny. But it's, you know, we're not capable of necessarily always understanding everything that we wish we could.
Yeah.
And, you know, that comes from me sitting back and knowing that there are plenty of deficits in my areas of knowledge that are really freaking hard for me to make ground in. And yet, that's okay. You know,
sure.
You can't be everything. You can't be... I look at some of the people of antiquity and I think, like, Jesus, how can people like Goethe and Nietzsche and whatever, like, how do these people exist? You know, at least I can think, well, I could beat the fuck out of them. So there is that. But it can be really intimidating to see how insanely amazing some people and throughout history have been. But yeah. There's no need for imposter syndrome, and there's no need for trying to compare yourself to others in a way that is not positively motivating. Like, it's good to have positive envy. It's not good to have ressentiment.
Yeah,
that will just tear you down and get you nowhere. And you know, I even there's people that I feel like I'm on par with in specific fields, and yet they've written books and I haven't. And I'm like, well, maybe I am. But those are those motherfuckers have books and I don't.
Right.
So I have to sit back at the end of the day, and if I can have a conversation with them and be like, yeah, you know, I've opened their minds up. Great. But they were brave enough to write a book and I wasn't.
Yeah.
So, or even like, I told Tate Fletcher, a friend of mine a while back, I go, you know, the fact that you got on stage and you've done stand-up, like, I would love to do stand-up, but I'm too scared to do it.
Yeah.
I have material I've written. You know, I can crack wise with folks, and I know lots of comedian friends and hang with. But there's a difference between being in that I could and I did.
Yeah.
And you did. And he's like, well, it's not that big a deal. I go, yeah, but it is.
It's a big deal.
It is. And you did it.
Yeah.
And so therefore, in that sense, you are greater than me because
right.
you did something that I have not done and have not been capable of doing yet.
Yeah. It's amazing. Josh, thank you so much.
I'm glad to be here. Sit down, have a conversation in person.
Yeah.
And yeah, I just hope people feel, I don't know, enlightened, maybe just confused. Fuck. I'm not sure.
I think they'll enjoy it.
I hope so.
Yeah.
I hope so. You know, I mean, at the end of the day, that's we got to do what we can to be better. Like I said, you know, helping people choose to be strong instead of choosing to be weak.
And any avenue we present, if it's like any fraction of the percentage of a motivating factor that gives somebody the push, I'm happy
yeah.
for that.
Me too.
Yeah.
You know, even when it comes to social media, I actually make a real point to put positive things in the world and not negative.
Yeah.
And I don't mean that in a trite sense. I just mean even like putting up pictures of beautiful scenery, art, music. Well, music that I like, at least, anyways. If you don't like it, understood. but trying to offset how the negative aspect of social media gets so much clout and interest from us, which apparently there are evolutionary biological reasons for that too. But
yeah.
You know, I'm doing what I can, the best I can. And ultimately, yeah, I'm pulling for you.
Nice.
You know?
I'm pulling for you. We're pulling for everyone.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Don't go anywhere. We'll be right back.
And now for the Q&A.
This is a question from Carl.
Hi, Carl.
Hello, AG. My name is Carl, and I was going to the gym a lot before Corona. Once I'm there and going regularly, I'm similar to Ethan in the fact that it's easier for me to stay on track going to the gym by going every day. I've not been in a while, and my question is, am I the only one who gets nervous the first few times back in the gym after being gone out of the routine? I really have to push myself to get back to it. But once I'm back in the swing, it's no big deal.
Yeah, no, totally. That happens to me. I mean, every Monday I'm practically, I don't know if I'm nervous, but it's like I've taken a day off and then it's restarting. And certainly if I take week off or weeks off, even I haven't done weeks in a long time, but any period of time where my routine is disrupted, regaining momentum in the routine takes effort. And so you are not alone in that. And I think holding that idea in your head is helpful, going like, I know I'm going to get back into this. I just need to do it. That's helpful. That's helpful to me, at least.
Love it. Great.
Yeah. I mean, thank you for your question, Carl.
If you have a question that you'd like answered on this podcast, please email it to AmericanGlutton.net.
Thanks for listening to this episode of American Glutton. I'm Ethan Suplee, and as always, joined by my chaperone, Paige Dorian. Follow us on Instagram at American Glutton Podcast. Sincerely.
Cool fact, a crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Also, you can get health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for you. Learn more at uh1.com. A lot can happen in 3 years, like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare tri-term medical plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.